Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and today we're going to talk a little bit about scouting from the perspective of just getting started with watching tape and studying the players in the game. And I have a guest with me who is a first-time guest who I've really enjoyed watching his work on Twitter, and that's Michael Crawford. You can find him at Abukari, at Abukari. That's on Twitter. He's a graduate of the Scouting Academy. He's taken another course, I believe, it right now. He's a freelancer for the Russell Street Report. And like myself, we have in common that we grew up as Browns fans. And Michael took the smarter route and didn't get emotionally biased and decided to stick with the Ravens. And me, I went a much different foolish route while I'm still looking at the Ravens kind of enviously, even with the way the Browns are going now. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. I'm only half joking when I say this feels almost a little bit like an Academy Award type moment for me. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity. And it's funny. We were talking before we started here about how our backgrounds were kind of similar in terms of our fandom with respect to the Browns. And I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, somewhat jealously now, like what you described, kind of having that same, view of the Browns right now. Like, looks pretty good. Well, what's going over there right now?
Well, I'm kind of thinking, and since we're both around the same age, I know you'll get this reference. Maybe half of you who are listening to this won't, but I'll just say this. Maybe you and I should star in a football fan's version of Trading Places and see how we like it later.
Exactly. We can see which one of us is Mortimer and how we do when the other side of things.
Yeah, we're back. Okay. So I mean, you've really gotten into this, you know, within the past, 3 to 5 years. And I just thought it would be great because I'm kind of going back and looking at how I've kind of built the stuff that I've built and having to review that somewhat. And I just thought it would be fun to just talk about, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned or had to learn to get started watching tape at a level where you're going to be sharing your results and really learning the game and getting to a point where you can even start doing freelance work.
Well, man, it's been quite a journey. Still ongoing, obviously. Hope I never reach a destination. I hope it's always a journey, but I think one of the things that kind of became apparent to me pretty early on when I decided that, hey, I'm going to maybe try to do this and share some of my thoughts publicly on Twitter, well before I was, writing for anybody, just engaging with people on Twitter, was that I needed to get a better understanding of what I was watching. I mean, it was great when the NFL made all 20, it's another, sort of age reference, right? There are people who might not remember when you didn't have access to Game Pass and all 22 footage. But when that happened, it kind of hit me like, hey, you probably need to gain a better understanding of what it is you're watching here. So, I mean, I kind of thought about it in like two lanes. So there was the individual sort of player performance lane, and then there was the sort of hierarching, overarching team scheme, defensive and offensive X's and O's concept sort of lane. And obviously they run parallel and even intertwine and, throughout games. But I really didn't know as much as I felt like I should have to be able to talk about it with any kind of, intelligence to it. So that's sort of what prompted me. And I tell you, one of the first things that I started to do was Google online and just look up old playbooks. I mean, there's a ton of them out there in PDF form. I mean, some of these things go back even into like the 70s, but you see a lot of stuff from the 80s and 90s and even early 2000s. And granted, when you're going through some of those things, depending on, the quality of them and how they're organized, And terminology, that's a whole nother conversation. It's right. like learning a different language. And then when you move from one system's terminology to another system's, then you're like on this Rosetta Stone kind of thing, trying to translate the terminology from one to the other and back and forth. But it was kind of that initial place where I started to get a sense of, okay, well, what are some of the basic foundational structures, you know, on offense, on defense, some of the basic concepts and schemes, both in run and pass. And it was really that, that, you know, I started to build from, and that kind of took me over, you know, back over into that other lane with individual player performance. I would say I didn't get as deep into that, until later. You know, I would say those first couple of years, it was really more about learning, you know, the sort of structures of the game. And so it was looking at those playbooks online. It was buying any kind of football related book that I could find, you know, particularly coaching, you know, sort of style books and manuals. Obviously, Twitter has been a huge help because there's a lot of good follows out there now. And even back then, I'd say back then it was only like 5 years ago when I started doing this. And the proliferation and just the amount of resources that are out there now compared to, say, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, you know, in terms of information and you know, educational opportunities about the game, just it's amazing how much stuff is out there now. And, you know, you can really educate yourself and really learn a lot about the game and about the different components. And then, you know, I guess we can talk about this later too, even, you know, those individual player performance aspects when you get into specific techniques, you know, related to individual positions. There's just so much out there now to consume and to try to absorb that, you know, it's that's why I say I hope it's a journey that never ends. You know, it's been this process of trying to educate myself more and more, and then, you know, add on the Scouting Academy. You know, I'll throw a plug in there for Dan, not that he needs one from me. but that was something I did last year. Was the first summer semester last year was the first one, because with all of these other things that I'd done, including, you know, like I mentioned, people on Twitter such as yourself, I think I said early on that it was your work on Twitter and the RSP that really pushed me into having an interest in this area. But, you know, I followed the Scouting Academy and, you know, reached out to some other people on Twitter who had done it and, you know, gave me a little bit more information about it. And I said, well, you know what, even though I've done a lot of things to try to educate myself, I still felt like I needed, you know, that experience that I didn't have. I didn't, you know, I never played football at any particular high level or anything like that. Never coached at any high level other than, you know, youth stuff with my kids and other, you know, right. 6, 7, 8 year olds, that kind of thing. So I felt like that was an element that I was still missing. You know, I think there's a lot you can do to educate yourself, but I felt like that was an element that was still missing. So, to get involved with that and have the opportunity to learn from former coaches, former players, to learn a really structured way of going about player evaluation, you know, regardless of whether you agree with their particular, you know, grading metric or terminology, it's still a structured process. And I think anytime you go through something like that, you know, there's things that you can gain from that.
Oh, absolutely you can. And I think that was a great explanation. And one of the things that kind of just got me thinking as I was listening to you, you know, talk about your story is just kind of from the learning standpoint of looking at all those coaching manuals, because probably I came from this in the complete opposite direction as you. So I focused on the players more and then ended up through having to learn, you know, having to answer questions that I couldn't answer, having to then start, you know, learning more about scheme and coverages and the team play as opposed to just the individual techniques. While of course I was still learning those as well, but it kind of went in the opposite direction. But I'm just curious about, you know, what you did to learn, you know, these different schemes. I mean, how did you study it? Did some people, I know it's like for them, it was, they get on a blackboard or whiteboard or coffee napkins or whatever, and their notebooks, and they're just writing things over and over again until they've memorized it. You know, some people talked about that they could use Madden, and they used Madden to, like, you know, learn or identify certain things. I mean, what was your process of studying, and what would you recommend based on what you've done that's worked for you?
Well, we started off early talking about how we were kind of around the same age. So for me, a lot of it was still about physically writing things down. You know, it wasn't, I mean, I know so much that we do now is, you know, we were typing things right into our phones, into a tablet, into a laptop. But I'm, I guess, still from that generation that likes to write things in a notebook. And yeah, I think there's, and I'm not doing this to like, you know, say that this is the best way to do it or anything, but I think there's some research out there that shows that you retain things better when you physically write them down as opposed to typing. I think I read something like that somewhere.
Yeah, maybe too.
Maybe I'm making it up, but
probably on something on paper, you know, probably too, that I probably read it.
There you go. Exactly. That's where it all ties together. But so it was a matter of sort of writing those things down, sort of drawing up some of the things that I was seeing in these playbooks. But then what I would also try to do, again, tying this back into, you know, having access to all 22, is watching those, you know, from both angles. And I found that one of the things that really helped me was sort of making my own cut-ups. Right. So I, you know, was taking screen recordings of, you know, different games that I would see on Game Pass, and then looking for concepts and then trying to make a cut up of just those concepts. So let's say we're talking about run plays and we're talking about, you know, a concept like power, right, where you've got down blocks and you're pulling a backside guard and maybe a fullback is kicking out the D. And so I would look for those blocking schemes on those run plays and make those cutups, right? And so it would just be clip after clip after clip of what I thought. And again, you know, a lot of this is all about what you think you're seeing, right, as you're learning, because sometimes you don't know, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So it was sort of putting that together and then sort of going back and then referencing these playbooks or referencing a coaching manual. So like to reference the playbook, I would say, okay, well, look, here's this old 49ers, you know, Bill Walsh, West Coast playbook. And, you know, they're running a power concept or they're running a zone concept. And then let me see if I could see something similar. And I think sometimes what, you know, if you explain that to somebody, sometimes they think that, well, wait a minute, that stuff was, you know, back then, and you're looking at more recent footage. But, you know, a lot of the core structures to those concepts are still there. You know, I know, We'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but I'm a Ravens fan. And a lot of the things that they did last year, once Lamar Jackson took over at QB, some of those things, particularly in the run game, they've been around since the early days of football. I mean, there were some wing T concepts in there. There were some single wing concepts in there, a lot of triple option concepts in there. I mean, you know, they are doing things that have been around and are as old as the game itself. So, a lot of that stuff is still at the core of football. Is it dressed up differently? Do people do different things with personnel and alignment and you know, motions and shifts? Absolutely. You know, they block things differently. They, you know, they're different problems. I think every generation in football, even though I don't think that there's anything new in football per se, but I think, you know, every generation sort of presents problems in a different way. And so offenses and defenses are trying to solve those different problems or you know, the appearance of those different problems in different ways. So that was a big part of my process. That was a long-winded way of saying it, but that was a big part of my process, was sort of marrying the things that I was seeing on paper, whether it be a playbook or a manual or whatever, to what I was seeing on tape. And that even went into the player performance lane that I talked about, because oftentimes in those playbooks and manuals, you know, there's coaching points about technique. And so then you could look at those and then isolate the film to an individual position and say, okay, am I seeing any of those techniques? You know, can I find a clip where somebody's using that specific technique, whether you're talking about offense or defense? And then again, trying to make another, you know, cut up clip of just those techniques, so that it just sort of reinforces and ingrains, and then maybe also shows you the variations of those techniques, because it's not going to be exactly the same. you know, from play to play, from player to player. But you can see some similarities and say, okay, this guy kind of does it this way, which is a little bit different. And this guy kind of has his own spin on it, which is a little bit different. But, you know, it's like running a slant route, right? There's a lot of different ways to run a slant route, right? Based on coverage, based on down and distance. You know, there's just a lot of variation in it. So that was and still is something that I continue to do to try to help me learn.
No, that's great. And it's a great explanation. I don't think it was necessary. I think I really was hoping that you would kind of go into this detail to break it down. And, you know, and one of the things I think about when you just talked about, you know, looking at power, you know, I mean, it's easy sometimes to when you said what you think you're looking at, you know, I mean, to this day, I know that the thing that I'll make a mistake on, if I'm going to make a mistake, you know, on something, I would bet money that I mistake cover three or I mistake cover one for cover three, a single high safety. Like sometimes I don't see the shading of a cornerback in it where it should be or where he is. And I mistake that as it's a cover three look when it's actually a single high situation or vice versa. Sometimes, you know, I just may misread what that is. And, you know, at first I'd feel bad about it if somebody like called me out on it. And I think, well, I mean, I've been doing, you know, even if it's like 10, 12, 13 years into it and somebody's like, that's actually cover one, that's not cover three, or that's cover three, not, you know, single high. And I think, wow, you know, it's humbling, but at the same time, you just think, well, yeah, that's true, but I'm sure that there's quarterbacks who also mistake that, you know, in the, you know, when they're sitting in, you know, they're under center and they're looking at it pretty quickly and having to diagnose it, they probably were like, yeah, I thought that was cover three. I didn't see that the safety was, or that the cornerback was shaded inside here and that he was actually playing man. So I was just curious if there was anything that that along your process where you found something confusing like that, where you find yourself constantly having to reinforce what it is that you're trying to learn or that you've been learning.
Oh yeah. All the time. I can totally relate to that. And like you, I mean, you take it to heart, you know, when you do put something out on Twitter like that and somebody kind of calls you out on it, you go back and sort of double check and you're like, oh yeah, I think they're right about it. But also to your point, you hear that from players. I mean, that's another thing. I've mentioned Twitter throughout this, that I think is more prevalent now is just the engagement from players, you know, current and former players, about, schemes and techniques and individual plays. And you'll hear even from some players who will say, hey, I'm not even 100% sure that this is what I thought it was. And you know, they're obviously in the game, they're in the meeting rooms, you know, they're learning this stuff and around this stuff all the time. But some of them will even say, unless you're in that opposing team's meeting room, in that position group's meeting room to hear how it's being taught, you're not 100% sure what it is. You can have a pretty good feel about it based on tape study and then based on some of the things that you've done. And I'm talking about from a player's perspective now, probably, you know, and not probably, obviously a very good feel compared to most of us, but even they admit that sometimes they're not 100% sure. So, I mean, I could give a bunch of different examples, but on offense and defense, actually, the one that you mentioned is one that, you know, still happens for me time to time, because there's just so many different variations, right? In between those two structures and they're similar. And so, you know, there's all different kinds of things that can be happening. It can be cover three, you know, with a cloud corner, cover three buzz, cover three robber. I mean, there's all of these different, you know, variations, and there's usually, you know, just a few adjustments, you know, a player here or two is adjusting their responsibility on one of those different variations. And unless you really study that and, you know, can sort of see it repetitively enough, it can be hard to sort of identify, you know, the very first time you see it. Another thing, because I do follow the Ravens and you know, write about them sometimes, is some of the things that they were doing in their running game with Lamar. I mentioned it earlier. It got to a point where I couldn't tell if they had literally designed a pull option for him on every running play. Like he literally had the option to pull the ball on every play and keep it, or if it was a bluff. or, you know, what, you know, you couldn't tell sometimes where, if it was a design part of the play, like a zone read kind of action, or whether it was just a bluff and he was never actually reading anybody at all.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know. And that's coming from, you know, the perspective of watching every single snap multiple times from the season. So even then I still didn't know. And unless you can get that feedback, you know, from a player or a coach, which obviously, you know, is rare. Depending on the team, some people are more willing to share some of that stuff than others. John Harbaugh's pretty close to the vest with that kind of stuff. And I think his assistants and coordinators kind of follow suit. Same with players too. So I just never really knew, you know, I had to make some assumptions about it and, you know, go ahead and share some of that stuff when I was tweeting out clips or whatever. And part of that for me is sort of the hope, sort of the expectation that somebody who knows more will see that and say, hey, no, I think you're not right about this. I think this is what it actually is. Cause that's an opportunity for me to learn something that I'm not 100% certain about.
Yeah, no, that's a great explanation of that. And it's true. I mean, it's funny. I mean, the things I remember looking at Blake Bortles back when he was playing South Carolina, and I had the good fortune of having some people I could talk with, and I remember asking questions about some things and them saying, yeah, it's actually, this is a hybrid coverage, you know? And I'm like, what's a hybrid coverage? And, you know, he's like, where it's, you know, man on one side and zone on the other. And they make it look like it's the same thing on one, you know, on each side, but then they see this subtle shift here. Actually, yeah, this, now they're playing zone and the other side's playing man. So when he looks to this one side of, you know, thinking it's man, he's thrown to the other side thinking it's man, but it's actually zone. And that's why he ended up getting intercepted here on this particular play. And I'm just sitting here thinking, wow, you know, I mean, just, it, you know, the kind of things that you learn from people with that. And I'm like, does that, you know, I mean, how many hybrid, he's like, there's dozens of hybrid coverages out there. And this was a guy I knew who played safety at a Division I school. And he was telling me, he goes, yeah, there's dozens of hybrid coverages out there. And in addition to that, there's things that I'm looking at in the pros that I can't even, like you just said, I can't even tell you specifically what it was unless I was in the room, you know, that's the meeting room where they're installing this kind of stuff, because I could guess like one to two, maybe three different possibilities here with this and just have no idea.
Yeah. So. And some of it too is just the cyclical nature of football. I kind of touched on that earlier, how I don't really think there's anything new in football. Cause you know, if you're just talking about a regular sort of play, not special teams, I mean, you've got 22 guys, right, on this defined space. And this game has been around since what, the early 1900s, maybe even a little bit earlier right. than that. How many different things can be done with those 22 guys in that defined space that haven't already been done, you know? And so there's actually a really good series of podcasts out there right now that I've been listening to. It's I think it's Keith Grabowski on Twitter. I apologize to Keith for not remembering his Twitter handle, but they do the Coach and Coordinators podcast, and they did this deep dive series on defense where they had some defensive coordinators at different levels. It could be high school coordinator. It could be a college coordinator. In college, it could be D1, D2, D3 coordinator. And they took, as the name implies, some really deep technical dives into some defensive concepts. And one of them I listened to recently was on pressures. And it's this guy who has a blog called Blitzology.
Yes.
Yeah. And so he was on that podcast. And
is that Coach Hoover? Is that who doesn't? No, that's not Coach Hoover.
No, it's not.
It's my husband's Blitzology. That's where I first learned about twists and loops and different types of runs through there.
Yeah, that's so great. I've been following him and that blog, you know, for a number of years, kind of learning, you know, the same way that you just mentioned that you were learning. And then he's on this podcast. And so, you know, now he's going into, you know, sort of a deeper level of discussion about some of this stuff. And one of the things they talked about was, you know, this, again, terminology, right, with this stuff, they call it simulated pressures right now, right, where it looks like you're sending more people, but you ultimately end up probably only rushing four, sometimes even only three. And, you know, you're having a lot of sort of bluff and disguise and then people dropping out. And so as he's describing it conceptually, I'm thinking back to, again, being a Ravens fan, I'm thinking back to Rex Ryan and Mike Pettine. And even before that, guys like Jim Johnson in Philadelphia. And you're thinking, well, I've seen this stuff before. This isn't new. You know, it's simulated pressure. What are they talking about? And so the way that he described it, because they mentioned that a little bit on the podcast, is that what the distinction is in his mind, he says a lot of it is similar. There's a lot of similar concepts back to what those guys were doing. Dick LeBeau, you know, fire zone. It almost sounds like a fire zone in a way. But he said the distinction now is the goal of what they're calling simulated pressures is not to necessarily overload a particular part of the pass protection. It's just to stress it. So you want to show them one picture pre-snap, then change that picture, right, and cause them to react to that change picture and create confusion, you know, just a little bit of hesitation. You know, maybe you think one guy's coming and he's not going. So you react in a particular way based on what you think is coming, and that doesn't happen. And that sort of momentary indecision is enough to allow somebody on the other side of the pressure to maybe gain an advantage, right? And be able to get in and get pressure on the quarterback, even though you're not rushing extra people. So it's just one of those things where, you know, it sounds like it's something new. There are some elements of it that are different than things that were done in the past, but you may not know, right, when you're looking at that, even if you're breaking it down, or even if you have a guy like that, you know, who has his blog and is a coach and has been around this stuff his whole life, he acknowledged on the podcast, hey, some of the stuff you just don't know. You know, even when you're seeing it and you're studying it as a coach who's been around this thing for 20 or 30 years, you just don't know.
And there's actually something quite comforting about that when as a student of the game, you know, to know someone's, you know, who's been doing this for so long and has built up that knowledge, be able to say, yeah, you know, some of this stuff will always remain kind of unknown. But let's transition to a little bit about, you know, studying players. I mean, what are some, you know, I think the thing that I've always kind of realized is that as a fan, we often think we know a lot about studying players, and because there's such a focus on players and oftentimes player technique compared to what you see, what can be explained in a scheme when you're watching the game on television. So I think more people feel like they're ahead of the game watching players. I'm just curious, as you've gotten through this, what are some positions that you were interested in before, and now maybe you're more interested in other ones as you've gotten into this, you know, in more detail? Which one, you know, are there positions that have become more appealing or less appealing? Are there positions that you've discovered were much deeper in terms of, you know, going down the rabbit hole and learning about it than what you thought? And just kind of, you know, those are a few things that I'm just kind of curious about from your standpoint.
Yeah, I could say that probably applies to all of them in terms of them being deeper than I initially thought. But in terms of positions that I was interested in, you know, when I first started, and maybe how that might have changed a little bit since then, is I think I've always been a fan of defense a little bit more so than offense. Obviously, I love both sides of the ball, but I probably lean a little bit more towards defense. And so I think the first position I was really naturally drawn to was cornerback. And then sort of by extension, because of the guys that they're going against, was wide receiver, right? And so it was kind of both of those two positions that I was sort of first initially drawn to. And it's interesting. They were the two of the positions that I actually got a chance to study and evaluate last year with the Scouting Academy, those two specific positions. And so they give you a lot of resource material there through the Scouting Academy. So it's not just the grading structure and terminology. There's a lot of other reference and resource material to sort of help, again, sort of increase your knowledge base and frame of reference for what you're looking at. And so part of it was what we kind of just talked about from a defensive back, because they kind of rolled both together. It was corners and safeties, just the different coverage, structures and what your responsibilities are from, you know, a position specific, you know, perspective. I know one thing, I'll throw out one example that kind of stood out to me. So I can't remember who the player was. Adrian Amos, that's who it was, who was with the Bears last year. So he was one of the guys that we had to evaluate. And so it was a run play. And, you know, so he's coming back from, I don't know, 10 to 12 yards and, you know, coming up the field against the running back. And the angle that he's taking to the ball, and this just shows you, right, how sometimes you don't even know what you don't know. The angle that he's taking to the ball is sort of more of an inside angle, right, sort of an inside out approach. And I'm looking, and of course, the running back sees that. And so he tries to cut and bounce outside. And so I'm seeing that. And I'm like, well, why would he do that? Why isn't he taking an outside angle, right? And force that guy back inside. But one of the reference materials they gave us said that in, you know, a particular coverage structure, that's going to be his role. That safety in that particular structure, in that particular position, he wants to approach it from that inside out angle. He wants that running back to bubble and bounce outside because there's a cornerback outside of him, right, who, you know, should be there to kind of, you know, assist on that tackle and help contain that. So it was just one of those things where I'd been, you know, watching things and thinking about things a certain way and thought that what I saw was, you know, a player not doing something correctly when I was wrong. You know, it was actually 180 degrees opposite from what I was thinking. And so, you know, there's a lot of that technique and scheme specific, you know, sort of elements that, you know, I'm still learning. Same thing with wide receivers, you know, in terms of another example would be like on certain routes, right? Sometimes guys, because of the overall structure of the play and how routes work together, you know, in terms of route concepts and complementary routes, sometimes guys will have a mandatory outside release. They're supposed to release outside that cornerback. They have to release outside of that cornerback to create space for a complementary route. And so when I didn't know that or wasn't aware of that, I'm thinking, well, why is he doing that? You know, he's just getting wider and wider and just pushing himself into the boundary and essentially taking himself away as an option for the quarterback. Well, on that particular play, that's what he's supposed to do. You know, that's how he's supposed to release, not to take himself out of the play per se, but he needs to get that outside release in order to create space for that complementary route. So it's those kinds of things that I feel like I'm still kind of learning, kind of definitely I'm learning, and even more. But then to tie it into the second part of your question, I would say I've become much more interested in offensive line and defensive line play. It's super, super intricate, a lot more than I realized just as a casual fan. I mean, because you see those guys, you think, well, it's just these big guys up there and they're, you know, they're blocking. And you understand that there's some coordination, certainly, and communication and cohesion that has to happen on the offensive line. But just, you know, how much those guys have to know and how much they have to process and how much they communicate, you know, before the snap of the ball with what they're seeing and then having to adjust on the fly. So you've seen this picture from the defense. You communicate what you think is going to happen and who's going to block who. Then the ball is snapped and that all changes. And now you have to react to that. And, you know, they're still communicating sometimes mid-play. Right. It's not necessarily the verbal communication. One of the I co-host a podcast with another Ravens blogger, and we had their center, Matt Skura, on the podcast last year. And Matt talked about that. He said, hey, sometimes I'm giving the guy next to me a shove with my elbow or, you know, with my hand, you know, and that's my way to kind of communicate. If we're like working a combination block, that's my way to kind of communicate to him nonverbally. Hey, I've got this guy. You can go off now. You can climb to the to the linebacker or to the next player. So that just became like really, really interesting to me. So I've definitely gotten more interested in those two positions.
Yeah. And the fact that they have to see the defense from a crouched position before the snap and have to, and they're viewing it from that perspective, as opposed to say a quarterback or receiver who's standing up and gets to see, you know, it's multiple levels in a perspective that's different is definitely, you know, fascinating from that standpoint. Yeah. I mean, I found I'm same as you. I find that I'm a lot more interested nowadays in line play and in what's going on in the trenches. And I'm so, you know, I have so much to learn from that perspective in terms of learning about, you know, different things with setting and usage and different, you know, different types of blocking schemes and adjustments and pass protection sets and, shifts and, you know, protection calls. And, you know, I find my, it's so funny because I just moved Mike and, you know, probably in the past, you know, 4 or 5 months. And once, you know, things kind of settle down, and they should within the next month or so, the first thing I'm going to be doing is painting this wall in this temporary office that I'm going to be in for the next year or two. And I'm going to paint it as like a, you know, with that like whiteboard paint, mm-hmm. and just basically be drawing all over the walls for the next couple of years, you know, learning, trying to make sure that I'm remembering and memorizing protections and different types of route options and coverages. And, you know, there's about 5 books that I've read over the past 2 to 3 years, and I've read them maybe once or twice or 2 or 3 times on some occasions and taken notes, but I feel like for myself, I just want to go through each book and literally just diagram the entire book, like each of them, until I've like can memorize stuff, you know. And I feel like I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life.
you really could. I mean, just on that specific part of the game, right? Offensive line. Yeah. I mean, just on that, let alone if you then bring in the defensive line. I mean, just something I tried to do a little bit this past season. And it's kind of game specific because you're dependent on the broadcast audio, is trying to figure out cadence. And the calls and the old line calls. And for whatever reason, on a lot of the Fox broadcasts, the field audio was a lot clearer. And so I don't know why that is, but you can hear it, right? And so I would take screen recordings of that. And basically what you just mentioned, I would, you know, keep playing it back, replaying it back, and writing down everything I heard. I didn't necessarily always, you couldn't always identify who it was coming from. Like sometimes it was obvious. Sometimes it was obvious that it was a quarterback. But then when you got into the line calls, sometimes it's a center, sometimes it's another guy, sometimes it's multiple guys. So I'm writing all these things down, right? And I'm doing this play by play, and then I'm trying to draw up, you know, their pre-snap alignment and then how they move after the snap and how they adjust to see if I can decipher sort of what's going on. And, you know, to some extent you kind of can, because there are certain things that I think are somewhat common throughout schemes. So like, you know, one of the things you see with offensive line, you know, with protection is slide protection, right? Half slide protection or full slide protection. And usually there'll be a right or left call for that, right? There'll be a right or left word like Ringo or Lucky or, you know, something like that. So you can hear one of those or you can hear those. And I remember listening to a game and they were making these calls, and there was a guy starting at guard who was a rookie. And I think this was either his first or second start. And so the center's making the calls. And you know, they're going, I forget what the initial, sort of word was, but basically what it was a dummy call, right? They had an active word, to like yellow, it was like a color or something like that to identify whether, you know, this was a real call or a dummy call. So it was a dummy call, you know, based on what I think I was able to piece together. And so they give the color word, and then they're making the dummy slide call, and they're going Ringo, Ringo. And then you can hear the other guy saying, is that legit? The one guy said, no, no, no. You know? So you can hear them having this conversation in real time, you know, with guys, you know, lined up right across from them, getting ready to rush the passer. So I totally get where you're coming from. I mean, you can really get deep into that. And there's so many different layers to it.
Yeah. And it's trying to find a balance, because it's interesting for what, you know, I mean, I talk about this a lot and probably every show, and some of my listeners probably love it. Some of them hate it, but it, you know, I'm endlessly fascinated still by the parallels this has to music. And because of my probably the most meaningful education that I ever received was as a music student. And, you know, there's this whole idea of when you're trying to learn how to play the music, especially improvised music, you sit down, you listen to the song, you listen to a soloist play, and the harmony that he's playing on is usually, you know, a basic structure that everybody knows. Like everybody knows the blues, how it sounds. You know, if you've listened to music any part, you know, for 20 years or so of your life, you can recognize what a blues sounds like, even if you don't know the theory of the chord structures in it. But then there's also alterations to those chords that can be made, and they can be adjustments made on the fly between the rhythm section or even the player who's playing certain types of notes that fit, that don't necessarily fit within the basic chord progression, but the way they play it, you know, instantly the people he's playing with are going to recognize because they know enough theory. They've played with this person enough to know the kind of adjustment that's, they're going to do something to add a little more color to the structure and make it sound a little more colorful and more intriguing and maybe make it sound a little sadder or happier or make it seem a little more out there and, you know, and add more tension to, you know, to the song or to the form. And so it's, you know, people literally will transcribe this, you know, I mean, I remember being in school and literally like writing down, you know, note for note what I heard and spending, you know, days or weeks, you know, writing down these solos. And, you know, there's a point where you can transcribe the heck out of a bunch of stuff. And then there's a point where you just got to learn it, you know, and then there's a point where you just got to play, you know, and you got to practice and play. And there's got to be a balance with this. And that's how I think the point I'm getting at is that there's a point where you can, I know that you can have the urge to just sit there and draw up everything and learn every type of theory and idea that you can possibly get your hands on. But then there's also a point of that's got to be balanced with, I've got to watch enough people on tape playing that I've got to see how people come up with solutions and not get too lost in the theory. Cause it's like, even these guys, I mean, it always comes back to me with guys like Brett Favre, who didn't know what a nickel defense was until, you know, because you look at him and then you think of someone like Dub Maddox and those are the books that I really want to be going through. A number of them are ones that I've read, but you know, his idea to me isn't so much about whether you recognize the coverage or not. I mean, it's important, but it's also important to just recognize what your progressions are against certain forms and recognizing those forms that you're seeing. So you may not be able to recognize, you know, you may not in the distance between, you know, pre-snap to post-snap to the end of your three-step or five-step drop, you may not be able to think in your head, all right, they were showing me cover one, but it's actually cover three, but there's actually now they're kind of giving me this on one side and the safety's doing this on the other and the linebackers dropping back here, because you're not going to see the entire field at once. But if you can at least read, okay, the triangle between the linebacker, the safety and the cornerback, and you see where they're positioned versus your receiver or two receivers in that area, you can make a decision. And so is it that important? And then that comes back to, is it that important to know all that theory? And then I think, well, it's helpful. Yes. But at the same point, it's kind of like if the guy's consistently throwing the person open and finding the wide open player and they're consistently producing on this level, does it matter to me as an evaluator whether or not I know the exact coverage versus that I know that the player knows what he's doing?
Right. No, I understand that. I totally understand that, because I get down those rabbit holes probably more often than I should. And so that's, you know, we started off talking about the learning process. That's another part of the learning process for me, is trying to find that balance, you know, learning when, okay, do you know enough that you can understand this conceptually and talk about it, you know, in a way where, you know, you can demonstrate some understanding? Are you going to be, you know, sort of expert level, you know, coach level? No, but do I need to be, you know, right. In certain regards, obviously I want to know as much as I can, but I mean, you hear coaches talk about this now, you know, it's not as important what the coach knows, it's what the player knows. And so how much, and that's very individualistic, right? There's certain guys who maybe can take on and process a little bit more of that sort of deeper level theory. And then there are other guys who, maybe, you know, learn in different ways. We talk about the different learning styles and how people learn things differently. So it's not necessarily about, is somebody more or less intelligent? It's just how they learn and how they process and retain information is different, right? And very individualistic. So you have to sort of learn your learner, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it. And then you can flip that around and look at yourself. You know, you kind of have to identify what type of learner are you and how much of that information in the way that it's presented to you and the way that you can retain it and absorb it is enough so that, you know, you feel competent with it and you can move on. I certainly don't have the musical background that you have, but, you know, obviously I followed you. So I know that you use those analogies and comparisons a lot, and it makes a lot of sense. And it kind of made even more sense for me last year because I just started taking guitar lessons. So like a very beginner, very basic, you know, electric guitar level. And I started to see the parallels. You know, I'm watching Lamar Jackson and people were talking about, oh, his mechanics and his footwork and he's not doing this and he's not doing that. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, obviously, you know, the coaches have been teaching him, you know, new things and trying to incorporate new things. But so he's trying to manage that while managing the game, the actual game, right? So the play calls, which are all new to him, you know, the individual responsibilities of everybody, the defense, and then making adjustments to what he sees when the defense adjusts. And I related it to like the very basic beginning stuff that I was learning with, you know, chords and, you know, individually strumming strings. And, you know, I'm looking at the fret right up top because I got to look and see are my fingers in the right place. And I got to look down and say, am I strumming the right string? And then the instructor's like, okay, now we're going to strum a series of strings, right, to play this guy. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I'm only used to plugging one string at a time. So now I'm really discombobulated and looking back and forth. And then I'm going back to Lamar Jackson. I'm thinking, so imagine, you know, all of that stuff that he's processing in real time to manage the game, but then still trying to incorporate new mechanics and new, you know, techniques. You know,
and those are fantastic points about people, Lamar Jackson.
People don't always.
If you haven't listened, you know, to the Lamar Jackson Baltimore Ravens conversation with Michael and I, check that out in episode number 68 in the RSP cast, which of course you can find on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Blueberry, among other places. And again, you can check out more about the RSP at mattwaldmanrsp.com, or you can order it right away at mattwaldman.com and get the pre-draft and post-draft. Remember that you'll also be put on the RSP newsletter, which will come out monthly between June and December. So you should get it sometime in June. And I just want to thank everyone for listening. You can check out more of Michael's work on Twitter at Abukari, A-B-U-K-A-R-I, as well as the Russell Street Report. Thanks again.